Good evening. Trump's niece has a tell-all book that says her uncle is a sociopath. The WHO announces a potential new threat from the coronavirus and a plan to bring broadband to the poor and a Native American leader on Trump and COVID. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the news for Tuesday, July 7th, 2020. Mary Trump, the president's estranged niece, says her uncle could bring about an end to American democracy. In her book, Too Much and Never Enough, How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man, is scheduled to be released next week. The trained psychologist says Trump suffers from a range of mental disorders and spent his formative years cheating in school and emotionally abusing his brother. White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany dismissed the book as full of lies earlier today. Trump's family has filed a lawsuit attempting to block the book from being published based on a non-disclosure agreement signed nearly 20 years ago. In her book, Mary Trump writes, Trump's dad, Fred Trump Jr., was an abusive patriarch who taught his favorite son to behave like a killer and see everything through the prism of money. Meanwhile, COVID-19 continues its deadly march across America with more than 47,000 new cases and nearly 400 deaths on Monday. Governor Ron DeSantis extended Florida's COVID-19 state of emergency for another 60 days, blaming young people for much of the upsurge by refusing to cooperate with contact tracers. Earlier today, DeSantis said he would be reopening Florida's schools on schedule this September. Yesterday, McEnany told reporters a decline in mortality as cases surged is a sign of progress.
I think the world is looking at us as a leader in COVID-19, because the chart I showed you, where you have mortality rate in Italy and UK up here and across Europe, and you have the United States at a low case mortality rate, it's because of the extraordinary work that we've done on therapeutics and getting PPE and leading on ventilators and having excess ventilators that we were able to deploy around the world and help other countries.
But Dr. Tedros Adhanom, the director general of the World Health Organization, says the pandemic is nowhere near over. In response to reports that Brazil's president Jair Bolsonaro has contracted COVID-19, Adhanom says no one is immune.
It has two dangerous combinations. One, it moves fast, and also it's a killer. And that's why we were worried and warning the world continuously. I think we are all vulnerable. And that's why we also say this is an enemy against humanity, that humanity should stand in unison to fight and defeat it. It's a dangerous virus. None like this has been seen since 1918. National unity and global solidarity are the most important, and without which I don't think we can defeat this virus. And the divisions actually will be advantage to the virus. Not only Brazil, the whole Latin America doesn't look good. Cases are on the rise, deaths are on the rise, and even North America, Mesoamerica, except Canada. Canada is doing better. We're concerned. And in the rest of the world, although I said the deaths are leveling off because some countries are showing some progress, but many countries are actually having more cases and deaths are on the rise. It's very important to understand the seriousness of this virus and to be really serious. No country is immune, and no country is safe, and no individual can be safe. But having said this, we wish His Excellency the President well. We wish him fast recovery.
Jair Bolsonaro, the president of Brazil, is often referred to as the Trump of the tropics. And that was Dr. Tedros Adhanom, who's the director general of the WHO. In a dramatic move this afternoon, the White House sent a letter to the United Nations withdrawing the United States from membership in the WHO. The United States is required to give a year's notice in writing and pay its debts to the agency in order to leave, and Democrats say Trump's withdrawal from the agency is illegal. The WHO ran afoul of Trump for allegedly covering for China early in the pandemic, but previously the president had publicly praised both the WHO and China's role. The WHO has reportedly been resistant to the idea that the coronavirus is spreading through the air by coughing and sneezing. Instead, they focused on hand washing and personal hygiene, claiming the bug is picked up from surfaces like doorknobs. But today, the WHO said they are looking again at this new and troubling way the disease can be spread. Professor Benedetta Allegranzi and Dr. Maria Van Kerkhove of the WHO.
Particular through droplets of different sizes, and understanding really what is the relative importance of this, and also understanding dose of the virus that is needed, in particular in this route of transmission that is the aerosol or airborne transmission. These are fields of research that are really growing and for which there is some evidence emerging but is not definitive. And therefore, the possibility of airborne transmission in public settings, especially in very specific conditions, crowded, closed, poorly ventilated settings that have been described, cannot be ruled out. However, the evidence needs to be gathered and interpreted, and we continue to support this. Yes, indeed, we do recommend a number of measures which take into consideration this possibility. We do recommend as much as possible avoiding closed settings and crowded situations. We do recommend appropriate and optimal ventilations of indoor environments and also physical distancing, as you know, and when this is not possible in areas with community transmission of the virus, we recommend the use of face masks, in particular fabric, non-medical masks for public.
So if I could just add to that, we do what's called a living systematic review. Every week we update the review based on the latest, and there are hundreds of publications now in the area of transmission. Any guidance that we put out has implications, of course, for billions of people around the world. So it has to be carefully considered. We want to be as fast as possible and adaptive and responding to the new evidence, and at the same time we have to consider the weight of the evidence.
In related news, New York City is taking to the sewers to track the coronavirus. Coronavirus can show up in a person's poop even if they don't have any of the symptoms yet. The Department of Environmental Protection aims to trace any spike in COVID-19 in the wastewater back to the neighborhood it came from. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. On Independence Day, President Trump gave a dark and threatening speech for Mount Rushmore, the South Dakota monument that features the busts of four U.S. presidents. He called his opponents left-wing fascists.
I am here as your president to proclaim before the country and before the world, this monument will never be desecrated. These heroes will never be defaced. Their legacy will never, ever be destroyed. Their achievements will never be forgotten. And Mount Rushmore will stand forever as an eternal tribute to our forefathers and to our freedom.
Mount Rushmore, the work of sculptor Gutzon Borglum, who was a leader of the Ku Klux Klan, sits in the Black Hills, territory claimed by the Lakota Indian Nation as their sacred land. Native people gathered to block roads to prevent Trump from arriving, and several Native leaders were arrested as National Guard troops moved in.
No peace! No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
But even as Trump's spectacle outraged indigenous people, a judge in North Dakota handed the Lakota people a big victory. After a four-year struggle, the Standing Rock and Cheyenne River Sioux tribes won a major victory on Monday when a federal court ordered the pipeline to cease its operations by August 5th. Federal Judge James Boasberg ruled the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers failed to fully assess the environmental risks posed by the section of pipe that tunnels under the Missouri River, a major water source for Native people in the region. Chase Iron Eyes is lead counsel for the Lakota People's Law Project.
I'm very happy that Boasberg seems to have woken up. Now, what needs to happen is either President Trump agrees to shut down the Dakota Access Pipeline, and his friend Kelsey Warren might be a little miffed about that. It's either that or those who are riding with Biden need to compel President Biden to, or Kanye West, to not only shut down the Dakota Access Pipeline by the end of the 30 days, according to Judge Boasberg's ruling, but also to address the rapists, the criminals, and the thugs at TransCanada's man camps in Phillips, South Dakota, and Faith, South Dakota. Because those arms of the financial extractive state are already in the Sioux Nation without our permission, without our consent, and are already abducting our daughters in the local honky-tonk hillbilly bars where those who are reared in imposed poverty conditions, they don't have a lot of opportunities, and so a lot of us try to escape, and we end up in those little hillbilly bars. Fair game. It's open season on Native women.
How is COVID-19 affecting? Because I know the governor of South Dakota, anyway, has been going fighting the rights of Lakota people to set up the checkpoints into their land in order to prevent this disease from spreading on the reservation. What's going on with the COVID situation?
We have about 100 active cases of COVID here on the Pine Ridge Reservation, and we don't have the ability to allow our elders or anyone impacted to quarantine in isolation. There's 5 families living in most of these households. The situation here is so desperate that when Governor Kristi Noem threatened to come and have our checkpoints removed by force or by force of legal action, quote unquote, we thought that they meant they were going to send the United States military or the National Guard to our borders by gunpoint, by another threat of violence with a gun to our head, just like at Standing Rock. That's what we thought was going to happen. And so 700 veterans who fought for this country, who were willing to give their lives to protect freedom, justice, and equality for the working class people, the working American, not the rich racist ruling class, not the Epsteins of this world. We volunteered to protect this land, these waters, and this country. And Americans need to learn that we want peace with them. That's why we signed a treaty in the first place. So when their leadership, their radical, racist, fringe terrorist leadership threatens to invade our borders, that we will show up with commensurate Second Amendment force. And that's what happened. Listen here, Indians. You don't have the right to tell us when and when we can't traverse your land, your sacred land. But the treaty says that we have that right. We are the true source of sovereignty for American settlers here. We recognize your presence in our treaties. We said you are our younger brothers and sisters. This is all tied to the checkpoints and our right to life, our right to be free from Eurasian plagues and diseases, and to begin to speak the our own languages, indigenous languages of this hemisphere.
Do you have control over who can enter the reservation in Pine Ridge and other places?
That our checkpoints are only concerned with our health and well-being, because America's leadership cannot be trusted with America's health and well-being. They don't even give a shit if we have medicine, accessible, affordable, or free medicine. If you come through our checkpoints, you'll get a friendly smile. What is your purpose here? If you have an essential purpose or if you have a right to interstate commerce, we offer safe passage in Arbor to those who are only coming here to do good things and to offer essential products, goods, services, and so forth. But the tourists who are coming here because they have too much money on their hands and they want to come see Wounded Knee or they want to come into our lands. We don't know where they're coming from. It's mostly tourists that are just being slightly inconvenienced. If they don't want to come to Pine Ridge right now, they can go to Mount Rushmore. You know, Kristi Noem wants them to go there. So does President Trump. And not even wearing face masks. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Why is she going out of her way to open up a couple of side roads?
If you look at our history, you can think of the reservation system as a political, legal, and economic subjugation, a cage. Think of it as a dog kennel. When we get outside of our subjugated status, they have to shock us back into that cage. And also, she probably wants to be the Sarah Palin to President Trump. We need to have a truth-telling and a conciliation. Look at how that radical, racist, fringe, terrorist minority is trying to goad this country into conflict, into a racial conflict.
It reminds me of the stories I've heard of what was happening in the 1970s on Pine Ridge, where you had these outside forces in those days allied with internal people as well, who were terrorizing the Native people.
Yes, it's much like the 70s, but this time is different because we have the language, the tools, the archetypes, and the ideologies of our oppressor. We have absorbed those and spit them back out. And now we're trying to unify each other on greater levels.
Anything you'd like to add?
We're working every single day here on Pine Ridge to save ourselves. And we would appreciate the help that you give in the sharing of our message.
Chase Iron Eyes is lead counsel for the Lakota People's Law Project. Kelsey Warren, CEO of Energy Transfer Partners, the company behind the pipeline, is a Trump supporter. Next year, an environmental impact statement on the pipeline will be completed and the project could be restarted. And while it's midsummer in the age of COVID, today it was all about when students will go back to school, President Trump earlier today.
So what we want to do is we want to get our schools open. We want to get them open quickly, beautifully in the fall. And this is a disease. It's a horrible disease, but young people do extraordinarily well. I was with the governor of New Jersey. We were talking and he said he mentioned a number, which is a very high number, but it's a number nevertheless, thousands of people. There was only one person that died that was under 18 years old in the state of New Jersey. And that was somebody, I guess, had a problem with perhaps diabetes or something else. But one person out of thousands of people, one person died who was under 18 years old. So that's a pretty amazing stat when you think of it.
And although they agree on little else, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio agrees with Trump that students should be back in the classroom as soon as possible. But Governor Andrew Cuomo might have the last word on that decision. The mayor promised today that he'll have more information on schools later this week. In the meantime, awaiting a final vote from the Department of Health later today, de Blasio announced he's opening 3,000 child care centers.
Bringing back child care is crucial. Now, during this crisis, there's been a very limited amount of child care. 125 child care programs have been up and running since April for essential workers' kids. But for everyone else, it's been a struggle. Today, the New York City Board of Health will be considering a plan to reopen child care centers across the five boroughs next week. Now, this is over 3,000 child care centers that could come online right away. And the Board of Health is looking at the data, looking at the facts, how to do this properly, how to do it safely. There's been a lot of conversation between the Board of Health and our health department and the child care providers over recent weeks. They are ready to go. They're waiting for that approval. And look, one of the things we see, thank God, is that the data consistently shows a low infection rate among children when it comes to the coronavirus. So hopeful that the Board of Health will be able to move forward today. Now, let's be clear. This is important because we want parents to have good choices for childcare, safe choices, to avoid the kinds of situations that not be as safe and might be unregulated. We want parents to know that the best quality childcare will be there for them. So strict safety requirements will be in place. There'll be real social distancing requirements as well. No more than 15 kids in a room. All staff will be required to wear face coverings. There'll be daily health screenings, regular cleanings constantly. Very careful regulation of any items that kids might use in common. So, for example, limited sharing of toys. We need to bring back childcare quickly and safely, and that's what we are working on as we speak. And we'll update you later on today on that vote by the Board of Health.
And de Blasio also announced his task force on racial inclusion and equity is behind an initiative to bring broadband internet access to 1.5 million New Yorkers who've been shut off from the web. And de Blasio adds the money's coming from the cops.
On the city level, going to take resources that came out of the NYPD's capital budget and put it into broadband access for residents of public housing. Low-income New Yorkers who need that access, particularly young people who need that access. $87 million coming out of the NYPD capital budget to go into that broadband access. Combined with other resources, that will allow us in the next 18 months to reach 600,000 New Yorkers who right now do not have access. Also, another form of redistribution will be to demand more of companies that have really, really profited without doing what they should do for our communities. So we're going to fight for a new state law to force internet companies to actually pay the city of New York for the use of our streets. They're profiting, but they're not paying their fair share. We need them to pay, and we would use that money to provide even more broadband access for New Yorkers who don't have it. And here to talk about this initiative, the deputy mayor for our city, but also the co-chair of the Internal Task Force on Racial Inclusion and Equity, Deputy Mayor Phil Thompson.
Not having access to the internet in 2020 is like not having access to public education was in 1950. It closes paths to opportunity and makes our economic and racial divides even greater. When our task force on racial inclusion and equity surveyed community organizations in the neighborhoods hardest hit by COVID, the demand for broadband access was one of the most frequent responses we got, including from the woman who's speaking right after me. As the mayor stated, this $157 million initiative, which will leverage private investment as well, will expand low or no cost broadband access to 600,000 people in 18 months, including 200,000 NYCHA residents. It will include neighborhoods that currently have very little broadband infrastructure, like East New York and Brownsville. The mayor's chief technology officer and the Economic Development Corporation will contract much of the work to be done by minority and women-owned businesses as well as nonprofits. Hundreds of young people from hard-hit communities will be hired and trained as certified broadband installers and technicians.
Deputy Mayor J. Philip Thompson speaking with Mayor de Blasio earlier today. And after a weekend marked by an upsurge in shootings, de Blasio blamed the carnage on COVID-19 and the ongoing economic crisis, while top officials at the NYPD say recent criminal justice reforms are also to blame for the uptick. Meanwhile, public advocate Jumaane Williams held a rally near City Hall on Monday, saying the gun violence was unacceptable, while stressing the city needs to focus on other solutions like youth programming and education to prevent violence. Other activists say the cops are always resistant to change and that every reform is a bad reform to police brass. And finally, the City University of New York decries a federal rule change announced Monday that could force hundreds of thousands of international students to leave the United States in the fall. The rules governing the student exchange and visitor program will require students who are in the U.S. with an F1 visa to take at least one in-person course. With the high probability that the coronavirus pandemic will continue to make distance learning the predominant mode of instruction in colleges across the country, the rule change means that most of the estimated 1.1 million international students will be forced out of the country in September. In a statement, CUNY leaders say the misguided policy change also threatens to hurt higher education at a time when the nation's universities are working hard to adjust to the dual health and economic crisis caused by the pandemic. We are once again disappointed that our country's leadership continues to restrict and reduce opportunities for those who seek them in the United States. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, July 7th, 2020. The news was produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.